This is PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller with the Daily Keller Hotline for Sunday, November 9th. Let's take a look at the final impact before tonight's TNA Turning Point pay-per-view and talk about the job TNA did promoting this show. They opened with a video package on the Main Event Mafia versus the group that I call the Small Young Jobbers, because that's pretty much how TNA portrays them, and they don't have a name for them yet, so we'll go with that until they come up with a name or stop treating them like Small Young Jobbers. The TNA Impact opening aired, and then, and by the way, within the TNA opening, there are three clips of Jeff Jarrett, who proclaims he's not a wrestler anymore, but he's still featured in the new TNA Impact opening, the brand new one that just started last week, as a wrestler three different times. Don West and Mike Tenay introduced the show as Pyro blasted as usual, and then they hyped the main event. They announced the main event and hyped it. Samoa Joe versus Scott Steiner. That's a main event that should have been built up for 2 or 3 weeks. I really think they're shortchanging themselves when they have a match of that caliber with Samoa Joe, your top babyface, one of your top 2 or 3 babyfaces for sure, former world champion, against Scott Steiner, who's the fifth member of the MEM. He's just returning. Why throw him in there like that? I don't get that. There's so many other ways they could have accomplished the rating that they got for that match and the story that they told with that match leading to the pay-per-view. And it's just inefficient is still the number one word I would use to describe TNA's booking philosophy and their booking approach. More than frustrating or dumb or stupid or a lot of the other adjectives that people throw their way or the fans of theirs, you know, with all their superlatives. It's just inefficient. Whether you like or don't like what they present, what they present is done so inefficiently. Anyway, the Main Event Mafia walked to the ring. Clips aired of the show closing angle last week with Kurt Angle and Mick Foley. Angle then introduced the newest member of the Main Event Mafia, their hitman, Scott Steiner. Not so sure about this hitman phrase. It seems like a little bit of a ripoff from Bret Hart. Not that Bret gets to call him, be the only person who ever calls himself hitman, but it does draw comparisons needlessly, probably. There's probably a better name for Scott Steiner, although the word enforcer's been overused, and that's kind of Arn Anderson, and pretty soon we do run out of words, so no big deal. Scott Steiner walked out with a mic in hand. He gave Kevin Nash the Wolfpack signal. Ah, the 90s. And then he did a long promo. Scott's always fun. I mean, you get a mic in his hand, and you do stop what you're doing and listen. That's to his credit. Now, part of that is you got to listen. You got to stop what you're doing and listen carefully, because, well, it's kind of tough to understand his words sometimes. But also, he's just so unpredictable. I mean, you just never know what he's going to say. He said that he's been at home rehabbing his injury while the Young Punks continue to disrespect the veterans in TNA who paved the way for them. He said, and it pissed me off. He said he wants everyone to recognize that this is the greatest assemblage of world champions to ever come together. He said they've earned their respect, but they have united due to that common respect. He said that they love the business and have earned the respect due them. And he said they've wrestled all around the world. He started giving examples like Boston Garden, where the Celtics won their titles. He's wrestled there. Madison Square Garden, where Muhammad Ali fought Smoking Joe Frazier. He's wrestled there. He said he's wrestled at the Tokyo Dome, in front of 70,000 people. You know, because telling the truth wasn't enough. You know, 62,000 is not impressive enough, so you got to lie. It's just that wrestling philosophy. Always got to add 10-20% on to every figure. He said that the young guys wrestle, but when they're done, they run back and grab their joysticks and play their video games and look at their comic books. He said they call each other during the week and then go online and play video games together. He's really talking down to them, talking about how they're just these, you know, these overgrown teenagers. He said, then you go online to these mark wrestling sites to see if you got a 4-star match, a 5-star match. What do you care what these geeks think? Ask us what we think, and we'll tell you that you suck. What I love about that is, you know, he kind of answered his own question. You know, if you're saying ask us and we'll tell you you suck, I guess that kind of answers why they go other places for opinions. But anyway, I mean, I'm from a pure business standpoint, I'm never quite sure it's a good idea to reference critics on the internet, because you're just drawing attention to them and then they go and seek them out. However, he's right to an extent. I mean, there are times wrestlers get obsessed with star ratings and they shouldn't. There aren't a lot of sites that use star ratings anymore, and not an even smaller number that have any kind of consistency to their star ratings. But there is no 100% agreement on star ratings either. It's a good conversation piece. But Nash, Booker, Angle, and Charmel laughed at Steiner's comment when he said, well, you ask us and we'll tell you you suck. Sting did laugh. I actually don't think that's a character. That's because his character is being more serious. I just think his mind was wandering. I don't think he was listening, honestly. Steiner said he's better than each of them. You say you've been in TNA since the beginning and you built this brick by brick. No, you were here in the beginning because you didn't have any other options. Now, what I like about Steiner is you look for these things. Those two statements he treated as if they're mutually exclusive, but they're not. You can go to TNA because you had no other options and still build it from the beginning brick by brick. He made it sound like it's one or the other, but the truth is, it's kind of both. I mean, he's right, and it's not really bad. They did go to TNA because nobody else would take him. And now they did build TNA brick by brick from scratch. He told AJ Styles, go back to your redneck state of Georgia in your redneck town and strap a billboard onto your back and walk down the street and nobody will still know who you are. I did not like this statement. It's one of the top three statements I didn't like on this show, full of statements I did not like. It's a ridiculously counterproductive thing to say, no matter what the context, because it rings true to viewers who don't know any better. They think, you know, that might be true. Maybe AJ is not a star, even in his own hometown, even though he's portrayed as one of the top two or three babyfaces on a national wrestling show on Spike TV. They need to get over their inferiority complex and stop even hinting, much less outright saying. The philosophy that's killed this promotion, the momentum that this promotion should have right now, which is if you weren't on Nitro in the late 90s, if you weren't on Raw in recent years, you're not a star. Dixie Carter needs to, and I wish he knew enough or had enough authority or gumption to stop this, but you got to stop the people who are holding back the young athletes from getting over, from reinforcing the notion that they use behind the scenes to justify why they get paid more money than Gail Kim, who's not on the roster right now, but drew better ratings than they did. Scott Steiner is out reinforcing the entire argument, flawed as it is, bankrupt as it is, that you have to be recognized in airports among people who used to watch wrestling or don't watch wrestling in order to be considered a star in today's wrestling environment. It's a flawed argument. It makes very little sense. And even if it did make sense and were true, you would not want wrestlers under any circumstance repeating it on television when you're trying to sell a pay-per-view main event that is Sting versus AJ Styles. That's your pay-per-view main event, and you've got a heel going on TV saying the challenger and top babyface in this promotion would not be recognized as a star in his own little, small, redneck hometown. Now, if Steiner had followed it up by going, everybody knows who you are in this country except in your own hometown because they don't have cable, okay, that's fine. That's a dig at his hometown. You can do that, but don't portray in a somewhat convincing fashion if fans kind of think, hey, Scott's been around, he probably knows what he's talking about, that Styles isn't a star. That should not be allowed on TV. Now, the reason it's slipping by on TV is Jeff Jarrett kind of agrees. I think Russo agrees because, how do I put it nicely? I don't know how to put it nicely, but I think he agrees with it. But he doesn't have an economic incentive to agree with it. I'll put it that way. He actually has an economic incentive to disagree with that and create some new stars because that's the way ratings grow. Historically, that's the only way ratings grow. By creating new stars, not by rehashing old ones. You can mix them in, but you got to have new stars. It's got to feel new. So it's in Russo's best interest to promote a different philosophy than that, but he doesn't. And there's no nice way to explain why. Scott Steiner promotes is allowed to say it on television because Jeff Jarrett's existence as a main event on-air player, his leverage with Dixie Carter that you need me because I'm one of the top stars in this promotion, you can rely on me and I should be in main events, which he will be again, that philosophy has to stand true, along with the fact that all of Jeff's good pals had that resume, which is they were stars on Nitro, they were stars on Thunder, they were stars on Raw. But to let Steiner say it, it's just so wrong. You've got Styles, not as an up-and-coming star who maybe a year or two from now can be headlining your pay-per-view. He's headlining on Sunday. And Steiner's making a case he's not a star. Okay. Totally counterproductive. He told Joe that if he went back to the Isles of Samoa, the only question people there would ask him is, who's the fat ass? Who's the half-breed? That's the difference between you punks and us. pretty much the same rant for that. He said the names on the marquee wherever TNA goes are the stars. Many fans applauded, which goes to prove this is not what Scott should be saying. The goal of a wrestling promotion should be to turn the fans against one side so they pay money to see that side get beat up, not allow them to go on there and justify their bloated contracts, which cost them their top ratings draw, Gail Kim, and have held back this company for years, and justify their, as I said, justify their contracts. They shouldn't be allowed to go on TV and say this. They shouldn't. Anyway. After calling them punks, he said that, and saying the names on the marquee are the true stars, and that the, and then the fans applauded this, which proves you shouldn't be saying that. Steiner called the younger guys curtain jerkers. He said the only time they get star treatment is when they step into the ring and sniff our greatness. He said it's a new day in TNA, and quote, we are here to kick ass and look good doing it. Although Steiner, we learned, won't take his t-shirt off anymore, so apparently he doesn't look that good. At least he didn't in the main event in this match. There's more problems here. I mean, to say that people, that these guys only tune in to watch the stars, and the only time they get a star treatment is when they step into the ring, continues to reinforce the notion that the main event mafia are the stars and the other guys aren't. The problem is, again, that's not necessarily a heel-ish comment. The goal is to get fans. I mean, I think the goal of this, the justification for the main eventers doing the same thing that killed Nitro, they're getting together and doing the same thing. We need to have us five, us six, us seven need to have 90% of payroll, because without us, TNA would fall apart. That's what this is all about. It's not about drawing a buy rate on Sunday. It's about justifying their contracts next time their guaranteed contracts come due. That's what this is about. That's what that promo was about. And you need to have somebody at the top of the company who either isn't a co-conspirator or is smart enough and has the power to change that and stop that. And they don't. And Russo is going along with it because, well, his pals, the ones who can either endorse him as booker or call for his firing and make life difficult for him, want those big contracts. They want the perception to continue that TNA needs them. I mean, you can see the little vicious circle going on here. And I don't even think they think that hard about this. I don't think the top guys conspire to do this overtly. It's just their nature. And now instead of Bischoff, you've got Jarrett and Russo going along with it. And it's very destructive. Samoa Joe, Motor City Machine Guns, Eric Young, and Jay Lethal stepped out onto the stage. Now look at this. Jay Lethal jobbed in less than a minute and a half on the last pay-per-view to Bashir in an X title match. Eric Young is a comedy jobber. The Machine Guns have been jobbed out because they went Blade however many months ago, and they've been pretty much jobbed out on TV in short matches. And then we're starting to turn heel, and then instantly that was dropped, and now they're good sports and baby faces again. And Samoa Joe. So it's basically Samoa Joe and the young, small jobbers coming out. I mean, it's just the balance of power isn't there. I mean, it's the same mistakes as a million-dollar club and whatever the young guys were called. It's like Kidman versus Hogan all over again. Oh, we're doing the job, but they're really not. Anyway, Joe at least got some good lines in. He said, if we could understand half of what you said, we might be offended. Some fans laughed and applauded, which is good. At least the heels aren't the only ones getting cheered and laughed at, and their jokes laughed at. He said none of them are denying what they've all done. He said they've been part of some big matches, but they have too. And he listed the matches that day the young guys have been part of, like Lethal Lockdown and Ultimate X. He said when it comes to high flying and the style that's defined TNA and made it different than any company you've been involved in, that was us. Again, this is really this dumbed down version, low IQ kind of step back. Look at the topography approach that Vince Russo and Jeff Jarrett take in this promotion, which is the only value the young guys have are that they're high flyers and they do X Division stuff. I mean, they just don't get it. That's not what defines the younger generation. There are young wrestlers like John Cena who have gotten over since the Monday Night War era who don't do high flying moves. TNA should have been in the business of creating their own John Cena, not continually bad mouthing the young guys who do high flying moves and treating them those moves and the wrestlers who do them as mid-card or undercard talents. And then what's worse is don't put them all together in a group and expect fans to take them seriously when you stack the deck with all the top stars who, through a self-fulfilling prophecy, have been booked to be the only credible stars in a feud and expect fans to pay to see it. Could have said the exact same speech back in the Million Dollar Club versus New Breed era. Millionaires Club, whatever it was called. Joe said the only reason, Nash, I'm not jumping at you right now is you backstabbing traitor son of a bitch, is I'm saving it for Turning Point. Now, with all the, I mean, well, whatever, I don't know what cliche is, but that's fine if that held true throughout the whole 2 hours. But it actually didn't. Joe actually did get his hands on Nash and did not save it for Turning Point later on, which we'll get to. And then he looked at Steiner and said, tonight, just so you have something to talk about at the Big Millionaires Club, something jerk, it was bleeped out, after I choke you out, you can tell Kevin what he's in for. So even Joe mentions the Millionaires Club. I mean, not Main Event Mafia, Millionaires Club. They're even referencing and joking overtly about one of the least successful company-killing angles of all time. Not only poor in concept, but poorly executed. And now you got Joe on TV acknowledging, yeah, we're reliving history. I'm all for factions. I'm just not for the execution of this faction or the way that they're doing it or the way that they built up to it. Joe did say they put a nice group together and adding Steiner was a good move. And I know they want to show off their good soul, their new soldier, so he wants to do the same. And then he called out their new addition. Christian's music played. Christian walked out. He said, not so fast, Joe. He said he thought he had made himself clear when he said he won't pick a side. But he said, I don't mind lending a helping hand for a night. He said he couldn't help but hear the Main Event Mafia bad-mouthing the younger generation. He said if they talk any trash about him, he'll slap that rug off his head. That was aimed at Booker. Booker's face began twitching. He said the young guys are trying to get where they're at. He said Booker didn't step into the business and instantly become a 6-time world heavyweight champion, and he didn't walk into the business and instantly become a 2-time world heavyweight champion. He said, I busted my ass for it. He told Booker that at Turning Point he plans to win a different title, the Legends title. He promised to beat Booker and embarrass him, and at the end of the night, stand over his prone body with the belt high above his head as he hears these words, I am legend. See, the problem again with this is you've got the young guys who are being treated as not being stars, but Christian, well, Christian's not really officially part of the group, but he's held the world title in TNA and has been on Raw. And you've got AJ Styles, who isn't trying to win his first world title. He's won the world title. He's won so many titles in TNA, he probably couldn't even list them. So this idea that they're, you know, this young up-and-coming group, it's not entirely true. So once you get past Joe and AJ and Christian, who what they say doesn't apply to, you literally are down to wrestlers who have been treated as jobbers. It just has flaws conceptually that really just destroy this angle before it has a chance to gain any footing. Booker replied and he said Christian is wrong because after Turning Point he'll be in the ring standing with them. He said in his country his ancestors always say you will know the true meaning of master because I'm going to own your punk ass all over the place. And he closed with, now can you dig that? So except for everything that I listed that was horribly wrong, good segment. Boris then interviewed AJ Styles and Mick Foley as they arrived. Styles said he was riding with Foley because Foley said he had something to tell him, but he said he got derailed because Foley had to make a stop somewhere. Boris laughed and said, oh, you had to take a curtain, wipe your angle. You know, that wasn't all that funny the first week, but maybe worth a chuckle. But the fact that they think it's funny 3 weeks later and worth repeating, it's just not that funny. And I know part of Foley's gimmick, you know, look at his first book with Al Snow and all the jokes about him is to drive a joke into the ground, and because you're self-aware that you're driving a joke into the ground, that makes it funny, not pathetic or sad or stupid or overstaying its welcome. But no, sometimes when you just drive a joke into the ground over and over, it is kind of sad and pathetic and lame and stupid, and that's what this is becoming pretty quickly. Foley then corrected Boris and said, no, actually, I stopped to visit a kid in the hospital, you insensitive jerk. But he said instead of telling Styles, he's going to tell everybody at once, and he'll tell them later. Then Booker T and Beer Money teamed up against Christian Cage and the Motor City Machine Guns. Booker and Beer Money won this one. Booker knocked out Christian with the Legends title belt and scored the pin after a distraction by Jackie and Charmel. That went 6 minutes. Decent action. Then Boris walked into Jeff Jarrett's office and said, Kurt Angle's looking for you. Jeff said, fine, let him talk to me, but I'm not going to wrestle him. And Angle said, Boris said Angle's not going to like that, and Jarrett said, I don't give a damn what he wants to hear. Jeff Jarrett decides when he steps into the ring again, not Kurt Angle. If that's all you've got to say, hit the road. So Jarrett's kind of acting like a jerk, too. Angle barged into Jarrett's office with the other Main Event members, and Foley was there, too. Boris held the mic for everybody. Jarrett told him to get what he has to say off his chest. Angle said, I'm obsessed with you, I want you in the ring again, and when I'm done with you, then Foley's next. Jarrett insisted sternly that he was only back for one match. Angle said his little girls know and trust him. And he said, he again suggested that if Jarrett goes on a business trip and he knocks on his door and his daughters answer the door, I want you to think about that. Once again, what are we supposed to draw from this? I mean, Angle is basically threatening to either kidnap or molest or just scare Jarrett's girls, his young daughters. It's just tasteless. I mean, it's one of the most tasteless angles in ages because if Jarrett's in charge of TNA and Angle is threatening harm to his daughters through intimidation or physical harm, you fire Angle. I mean, that's a fireable cause. You don't sit at your desk and go, "How dare you?" You know, that's to not just seem tone deaf, to not seem completely like Jarrett's underreacting to a veiled, not even a veiled threat, a threat to his daughters. More has to happen. That should be the final straw, if it's a straw that's used. It should not be the buildup. How do you top that without actually doing something? I mean, how do you top it? Are they building up to Angle showing up at Jarrett's house, ringing the doorbell, and scaring his daughters? I hope not. I hope not. You don't do that. You just don't go there. I mean, it's left to viewers' imaginations what Angle's talking about, and it's not good. It's not entertaining. It reeks of desperation that I would have thought was beneath both Angle and Jarrett. Anyway, they went backstage. Awesome Kong and Rai Shisai were beating up Roxy. That changed up the planned tag match later, which we'll get to. Roxy was taken to the hospital. Then Tanahashi and Volador took on Matt Morgan and Abyss, LAX, and Team 3D, and a four-way ladder match for the tag team titles. That's right, a four-way match wasn't enough. Putting the tag titles on the line wasn't enough. We had to add a ladder. Of course, when you have a ladder, nobody has to do the job, so to speak. No one has to get pinned because people hate losing that way. Anyway, this one went 8 minutes. It was okay for 8 minutes, but for many reasons, just a bad idea to have this match. It comes at the expense of building up Sunday's tag team title match with Machine Guns, who didn't get any promo time. They didn't get to really hype their match. We're already looking ahead past that. It creates a sense of TNA's looking past Sunday and that the Guns won't win because the Guns are babyfaces and babyface team won. Abyss and Morgan won. And also, four-team ladder matches should not be on television, at least not in a mid-show slot with no hype. And it should last longer than 8 minutes. And it should be hyped for a week or two ahead of time, so a match of this type isn't defined down as just being some lower card toss-off gimmick, and so on and so forth. It's just one of the perfect single examples of how inefficient and flawed TNA's entire booking philosophy is. It's not personal opinion, it's just fact that when you give away a match like that with title match stipulations, ladder involved, four tag teams, you should hype it, not just throw it out there. And that's only if you include it, which you shouldn't include in the first place. But if you do, it should be the main event. It should be talked about for a couple of weeks. But really, it just shouldn't even be on television. It should that a match of that caliber with all those tips, that should be on pay-per-view. That's why you should want to pay to see a pay-per-view, because you get to see matches like that that you don't get to see on TV. But when they put it on TV and don't treat it like a big deal, it's hard to make a big deal out of Machine Guns against Beer Money, for instance. I mean, it seems kind of backwards. Shouldn't Machine Guns against Beer Money be on TV and a four-way ladder match be on pay-per-view? Yeah, it should. That's the way it should go. Mick Foley walked to the ring. He invited AJ Styles to the ring. He said that it was gutsy of Jeff Jarrett to found TNA, to start TNA in the first place, but it was also gutsy to build the company on the back of AJ Styles, a relatively unknown wrestler at the time. He referenced a conversation Mick Foley did that he had with Raven way back then and asked Raven about him, and Raven said, yeah, he's phenomenal, and Foley said, he's proven Raven right. Is Raven coming back? Is that why his name was mentioned? I wouldn't mind bringing him back, as I'm on record stating he wouldn't be one of my top 10 draft picks if I got to start a promotion from scratch. But if they want to bring him back, I don't think that's a bad idea. I don't know where he fits in, young guys versus veterans. But anyway, Foley said that time has proven change is inevitable. He said that Styles has a lot on his shoulders right now, including representing young wrestlers in the back honorably, as he faces Sting on Sunday. He said, we have a new president-elect on our hands. One of us is happy about the change, the other one isn't. But we can agree to disagree without it getting ugly. Boy, I've been tested on that this last week or two with friends. This was clever, because Foley, you know, this was taped before the announcement of the president-elect. I think they had a pretty good idea when this was taped who was going to be elected president, but he didn't mention it by name. Before the final decision. He didn't mention who actually was the winner. But anyway, Foley said that Styles is president-elect of the new generation of wrestlers, and this Sunday at Turning Point, he needs to go out there and take his oath of office. Good Foley promo. I mean, it was fine. It kind of, you know, had a little current events analogy and worked it all out. He also said that he hopes Sting comes to his senses afterwards. Sting comes out and walks onto the stage and says Foley that he's spoken nothing but the truth since arriving in TNA. He said he has to be careful, though, what he says to the younger wrestlers. He says, if you don't tell them what they want to hear, it's tantrums, bombs, threats. He said they want to be fed with a silver spoon, but he hasn't been around long enough to experience it. He said what he's done for pro wrestling is unprecedented. The fans applauded and chanted, Foley, Foley. I mean, Sting is, again, you've got the, it's, again, it's the Millionaires Club. It's sabotaging their own promotion for the sake of their contracts and their spots. They're giving themselves lines, or Russo's giving them lines, in order to have them go to bat for him as this great booker who deserves his job. Whatever the conspiracy is, these heels are being given lines that they're reading that get them cheered. And it's counterproductive to, it's the old game, and it's being played. And it's counterproductive, and it's sad that somebody in power isn't smart enough to stop this from happening. Fans are booing, and Sting is getting fans to chant Mick Foley and paying respect. It's just, it's so wrong. Styles interjected, or actually Sting predicted that Mick would soon see the error of his ways and see that the young guys are punks. Styles interrupted and said, Sting, don't talk about silver spoons. You're the one who got limousines and first-class seats and planes. He said, if you're trying to just get in my head and piss me off, it's working. He asked them to tell him how they got to the stage of their careers. Sting walked to the ring, and he said they got there because he questioned his character and spit in his face. But that's what brought them to this point where now they're having a grudge match. Styles shot back that Sting can have his big contract, but he has his word and he stands behind it. Now, by the way, none of this has anything to do with the TNA championship that Sting has. They're not talking about that. This is all about some grudge, which the fans are kind of ambivalent about because they're kind of cheering when Sting says certain things or Kurt Angle says certain things. Styles said, when you were having your arguments with him, you were always right and he was always wrong. He said that Styles is, and we really didn't know the context. I actually edited something Styles said out at that point. You could tell there was a little jump. Then Sting said Styles' dad had the right to kick him out of the house. So apparently we joined the Styles' dad conversation mid-sentence. Tenay said that Sting had no right to go there. That was disgusting, Tenay said. Sting then asked what little AJ is going to do when he sees his dad throwing a tantrum on TV. Styles said he had no right to bring up his son. So now we got another young child being brought up as part of a wrestling angle, and it just doesn't work. Tenay threw DeLauren backstage, who interviewed Taylor about Roxy's condition. She said that Roxy was on her way to the hospital, and so she's just going to go out there and fight 2-on-1. Roxy Khan stepped in and said, no, let me be your weapon of mass destruction for hire. I'll go out there and join you. So she did, and she turned on her. She turned on Taylor, helping Kong and Saeed get the win in 3 minutes. They went to backstage to Nash. He actually gave a good promo here. It didn't have any of this other stuff that's so counterproductive. He just said Joe is doing a lot of talking, but talk is cheap. He said a year ago, Joe ran down his best friend on the microphone, and he said, I knew right then the guy was a piece of shit. He said that he's trained harder than ever for this. He said he's bigger and stronger than Joe, has 20 years experience, and has lost count of how many times he's been a world champion. He asked when the last time was he faced a 6'10", 300-pound man in shape, pissed off. Never? I've faced Samoa Joe's before, and I've jackknifed every one of them. But Joe's never faced Kevin Nash or anything like him, he said. And he said, the final question is he ready? Now, that was Nash at his best. He was confident, collected. He had a specific match to talk about. And he set it up as a big challenge. And it means more now if Joe wins to beat Nash, based on what Nash said in that promo. All right, from there, Bashir had a sit-down interview with Mike Tenay. He said that he had a normal life growing up as an American kid, but after 9/11, that's when people started treating him differently and looking at him differently. And Tenay said, well, you know, in defense of the fans who are booing you now, you have been anti-American in every promo you've given since you arrived in TNA. Bashir said he doesn't want to be misunderstood. He loves America. He said America gives him the opportunity to say what he wants to say. It's the American people who make this country difficult to live in, Bashir said. He said that the media has brainwashed American wrestling fans into thinking he's a bad guy because of how he looks and dresses. Tenay said he calls fans mindless sheep and then expects them to respect him. He said whenever he wrestles in the rest of the world, he's revered as a fan favorite because of how good he is. He said Americans boo him because they're sheep. Tenay got combative and said that he was a person who lobbied management to get him added to the Ultimate X match as part of Team International. He said Tenay lobbied to bring him in, but then buries him on the mic every chance he gets, and he's supposed to be grateful. Tenay said America, every American lost something because of 9/11. Bashir shot back, oh, really, Mike? What did you lose? You still got the same cushy job. He said promoters have told him they can't book him because of the way he looks ever since 9/11. It's affected his livelihood. Tenay said that's why TNA is different. Bashir stood up and got hot and broke into Farsi, a big rant. Security then intervened. Back at ringside, Tenay said that's the first time security's ever had to intervene on one of his interviews. Then it was a six-man match, Kurt Angle, Kevin Nash, and Sting against Eric Young and Consequences Creed and Jay Lethal. Tanay said the Main Event Mafia are the Elite after the Elite. After Ring intros, they cut to a break. They came back and actually joined the match, not in progress, but they waited to start it till after the break. And it only lasted 4 minutes. It ended with Creed getting angle slammed for the clean win. This just did nothing to dispel the notion that Main Event Mafia's rivals are short young jobbers. The same group TNA has portrayed as losers for months who suddenly are supposed to be this credible opposing force to these stars. Other than Joe, Styles, and Christian, they haven't given anyone in that group anything that adds up to Main Event stature. And jobbing these three out in 4 minutes just further confirms nothing has changed. You can't turn Young into a star. Really, Lethal and Creed are damaged too. But why confirm it with a match like this? They could have put Nash, Angle, and Sting against three jobbers from Orlando, from the indie scene, accomplished the same thing. It just makes no sense. All right, Lauren interviewed Rhino. This was the low point of the show. Wow. Rhino's just a male chauvinist pig asshole. His character, that is. I don't know if he's reading these lines. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish with it. But first of all, he calls Lauren Toots again, which he's just such an ass when he says it. I mean, what a catch Rhino is if you're a woman. Then he asks how many times we're going to open our arms to people of foreign descent and abuse the privilege and let them abuse the privileges this country affords them. I mean, there's so many things offensive and wrong about that statement, given the context of what it's being said. He then turned to the camera and admitted that Bashir was born in the U.S. So, really, he's upset at Bashir, but he went on a rant against immigration, which all of us, except the first Americans, the American Indians, Native Americans, were all immigrants. And we've all tried to change the country. Every generation has come and had their influence, you know. I don't know. And then he says, Bashir was born in the U.S. and chooses to stay here. But as the old saying goes, love it or get the hell out. And again, I said this last time he said this. I said it when Shawn Michaels said it. Tell that to the women who fought for voting rights, or the blacks who fought for racial equality, or the soldiers who are currently fighting for better medical care for their war injuries. I mean, no, you don't love America or get the hell out. You can love America and still want to make it better and admit that it's imperfect. The new saying should be speak up to improve it or get the hell out. Lauren corrected Rhino and said, I think the saying is love it or leave it. He told her to give him the mic and get your pretty little ass out of here before I gore you. Again, just such a classy person. They're actually portraying this jerk as a baby face. He said, I've never seen a baby face act like a bigger prick, Triple H included, than Rhino does week after week. Is he supposed to be admirable? Are we supposed to admire this guy? He looked at the camera and then said he's against all Bashir stands for and those who abuse this country for what it affords them. I mean, his promos are hard for me to watch. I mean, they're literally hard for me to watch. They're so ignorant, dumb American in tone. Throwing in and then throw in male chauvinist pig for good measure. It's disgusting to see that they put this on TV and think, I mean, how low do they think of their fans? How little do they think of their fans to think that they're going to cheer a guy who treats Lauren so disrespectfully for no reason other than she's a woman, and then talks like he does? I mean, it's mostly how he treats her. I mean, some people might say, oh, it's, you know, Bashir's being unpatriotic because of he seems too angry and there's better ways to disagree with the country. And there's no doubt that's true. But it's just, I don't know. It's a very, very unappealing character he's playing. All right, then Main Event time, Scott Steiner versus Samoa Joe. This one went 9 minutes. Joe is back and forth. Steiner didn't take his shirt off, by the way, and they explained this by the Joe jumpstart the match, so Steiner never had a chance to, as opposed to he's embarrassed by how he looks, which I suspect is the case. I'm guessing that's the case. But he can still do a bunch of push-ups. He showed us that before they went to commercial break. They came back. Nash came to ringside. Joe got distracted. Steiner knocked him out with brass knuckles. When Joe was distracted, he actually dove through the ropes and attacked Nash, going against what he said earlier, which is the reason I'm not going after you is I want to save it for a turning point. So the bookers can't even keep track from hour one to hour two what they're scripting the wrestlers to say versus what they're going to have them do later in the show to contradict what they say. Joe returned to the ring where Steiner immediately popped him with brass knuckles and scored the pin. 9 minutes, 3 minute break in the middle, didn't really have a chance to get rolling. Not a particularly good match, but not bad either. It just was kind of there. I just wouldn't have let Joe. I would not have booked this match in the first place on short notice. I would have hyped it for 2-3 weeks. I would have saved it for pay-per-view. I wouldn't have let Joe get his hands on Nash before their match, and I wouldn't have had Joe, under any circumstances, lose 3 days before the pay-per-view. There's a lot of other matches that could have been the main event of the show, and they could have accomplished the same angle in a different way, more efficiently, than they did here. Afterwards, Nash took some shots at Joe in the ring, and then Styles made a prompt save. The other Main Event Mafia members walked out as Tenay and Wes plugged the matches at Turning Point. And then they closed with a song by Cured with a bunch of hype for the pay-per-view later tonight. So that is it. That's my rant on Impact. Plenty of rant-worthy material on the show. I mean, it's an entertaining show. I've said this for years. It's an entertaining show to watch. I don't get bored, but I do get frustrated. But even more so, I just think as an analyst who's got a decent track record watching promotions and as my job has been for 21 years, trying to figure out what draws and what doesn't, and looking back at history even before the last 21 years, at what worked and what didn't, and then trying to apply it to the current environment, the current situation, and say, would this predictably work or predictably fail based on what your goal is, which is to draw fans and draw money? And applying that standard, I mean, if you watch a show with that standard, it's very counterproductive, inefficient, back-ass show, week after week after week most of the time. But is it entertaining? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the more entertaining shows out there right now. It's better than Raw and SmackDown a lot of weeks if you turn your brain off as someone looking at wanting to see TNA succeed and wanting to see the best talent rise to the top or new talent rise to the top. Yeah, it's frustrating. But if you just kind of watch it as a self-contained 2 hours of escapism, yeah, it's good. There's some good moves. There's some fun characters. There's some outrageous characters. You know, there's some charisma. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. And that's why it's such a hot topic. It's such a divisive topic with people talking about Impact. There's people who hate the show because the frustrating aspects of it drive them nuts and they can't see the good. And then there's people who see the good parts and they don't look at it as a business. They just look at it as, hey, entertain me for 2 hours. And damn it, that was a lot more entertaining than Great Khali's Kiss Cam or yet another edition of Raw with the same old stale format and same old stale wrestlers. Yeah, I get that, and I understand that, and that's why it is a mixed bag, and there's good and bad about Impact, but it's still a frustrating show that's holding this promotion back from where it should be going with the talent they have. That's it for me for now. Until later tonight after Turning Point, this is PW Torch Editor Wade Keller signing off.